Jim Bohannon live in our studio here in Janesville, normally broadcasting from Washington, right?
Yes. Well, actually, I do have a lake home in South Carolina that I am occasionally at, too. But yes, ordinarily.
So what does a national talk host do? I mean, when I come in the mornings, I first grab the local paper. I go through that. I go through the Bloyd paper headlines. Then I usually spread out to some other. I check the city council agendas, things like that. I'm looking for things that are of interest to the local audience here. When you have to do that on a national scale, what do you look for?
Well, you look for obviously things of national note. Now, I have on many an occasion found a good local story that had national implications. Mm-hmm. If something is happening in Janesville or Beloit or what have you, what about in your community? Give us a call because some of the issues that come up locally have their counterparts all across the country. So that's been helpful on occasion as well. Mm-hmm. But, of course, I can't check localities.
Pretty tough.
Yeah. So I just have to pretty much go with the wire services. I have to go with recognizable websites and the like. And I'll touch pretty much all of them. I'll hit a Drudge or a Breitbart or a CNN or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do the best you can.
And I get to those as well. But interesting that a lot of national things, headlines do start local at some point.
Sure, absolutely.
We have, in fact, this Friday, we're going to be revisiting the whole local General Motors story here.
Yeah.
Amy Goldstein from the Washington Post has written a book, and she's going to join us. She's going to actually be in town on Saturday to do a book signing over at the Hedberg Public Library. But it's interesting that, again, you've got a president who talks about bringing back all these manufacturing jobs, and we're manufacturing jobless ground central, if you will.
Well, yeah.
As a community that just got smacked right at the worst possible moment in the loss of manufacturing jobs at that General Motors plant. I think that's why there's such continued interest in the story here. How do communities recover from that? And obviously factories have closed throughout the course of history.
But was this the oldest General Motors plant in the country?
It was the oldest one in the country, oldest one in the system. And it's, you know, it's eerie when you drive by even now. My wife and I just drove by yesterday, and it's like a city within the city. It is a mammoth structure when you really stop and look at it. If you just drive by it and incidentally, oh, yeah, that's where GM used to be. But if you just stop and look at it, it's monstrous. And
I'm surprised that something hasn't been done. I mean, I don't know what you could turn it into—an industrial park or
Well, and I think that's still, you know, it's still in the works. We're told, you know, we get all the info from folks who are GM has got it for sale. They apparently have two interested buyers. They're trying to work out the closing details, and we watch with interest, obviously, about that. But you wonder in this idea of bringing back manufacturing jobs, so to speak, and exactly what that would look like. If you brought back manufacturing jobs to Janesville, Wisconsin, they probably wouldn't look like what people lost, so to speak. I mean, when the jobs went out of here, GM was already under a lot of pressure. And I know when they left, there was a two-tier salary thing. There was the new employees that were in at this level and the older employees that were in at this level. But the idea of, and now you're talking, you know, 15 years ago or better. So when you say, you know, $24 an hour jobs, it doesn't necessarily sound like super, super great job. But back then it was. It was still a good job.
It's still better than a lot of people who used to work there are getting.
If manufacturing comes back, it's probably going to come back at $15 an hour.
Let's not forget one other thing, too, that for every job that is lost through outsourcing, there are probably four or five jobs that are lost to automation. Those jobs will never come back, ever.
And I think that is one of the bigger issues out there as it relates to manufacturing jobs. You look at the idea that, well, it's because they moved it to Mexico because it's cheaper labor, and it is. And fine, but if
but those jobs aren't going to last that long because automation will catch them too.
And technology is still running at basically exponential growth. So it's going to get out to wherever those factories went initially. But if you force them to come back, if Trump puts this border tax on products, for instance, and you bring them back, companies will do what companies are already doing. They're going to look at it and they're going to say, okay, yes, it's going to cost us $250,000 to put this robot in place, but that's only 5 years of a salary at such and so, and then we're going to be, you know, And that's what they'll start doing.
Anything that you do like that, whether you raise the minimum wage, whether you apply a border tax, whatever you do like that, there are technologies out there right now that I'm sure are viable, but they're not economically viable.
Right.
You start raising the cost of labor, and all of a sudden, they are economically viable. And a process, let's say for, I'll make this up, a process for, let's say, picking cherries, let's say, which was not economically viable, cost too much to put the machines in. Now you raise the minimum wage and you really enforce it, all of a sudden that technology that's maybe sitting on the shelf, now it's cheaper. You're going to see a wave of automation. And you're going to see it in fast foods first.
Yeah,
you're going to see a lot of automation.
The kiosk thing is becoming more and more, and I think it's only being tempered by the fact that that industry is trying to let their demographic catch up with technology. Because for the life of me, I can't understand why if I'm sitting at Applebee's, Jimbo, I can use the little kiosky thing they have at my table now.
Right.
I can pay my bill there and not have to talk to a server. I can order appetizers and either desserts or drinks, but I can't order my full meal yet. It doesn't make any sense to me. Well, I think that's just because they haven't been able to really let go of the server yet, but that day's coming.
Yeah, and I can't wait when I show up early so that I can make my own meal before I serve it to myself.
That's right. Yes. Just push the thing. And
sure.
All right. Hey, let's go to the phones.
All right.
Steve is up first. Good morning, Steve. You're on with Jimbo Hannum.
Hi, good morning. Got a question and a comment. Mm-hmm. My first question is, to your knowledge, is Donald Trump brought back any of the products that he, I'm sure, contract manufacturers, but the shirts, the ties, and other from overseas? And I agree on your comment that automation takes the place of more than most of the lost jobs. And my comment is, at election time, Mexico was paying for the wall. And now we're sitting on potentially the $20 billion bill for that, which is crazy in my mind.
Well, Trump never intended that Mexico write us a check up front. I mean, although he was never very good at explaining that, and he was always cramped by 140 characters for explaining what he meant. But he always meant was, we'll build it, and then we will take the money out of our dealings with Mexico, be it a tax on cash that is sent back to Mexico by citizens in this country working or whatever. They were never going to pay for it up front.
Okay, I think that was very unclear at election time.
You better believe it was
unclear.
It was more than unclear. That's Donald Trump's method. He doesn't explain stuff. He blurts.
Yeah, and I think he depends on that emotional blurt to garner him some extra support. Steve, appreciate the observations and the call.
Yeah, and for your part about clothing,
back his manufacturing, though, please. Has he brought any of that back?
I'm not aware of anything. I mean, there have been a few companies, of course, an auto plant here or what have you, or something there. There have been a few isolated instances of places that did not go, that were going to go. I'm not aware of anything that has left that came back. And in terms of clothing, you mentioned clothing. I'm not aware of anything in terms of textiles or clothing.
Just from Trump's, the Trump
his
hats and the Trump
products. Because I think that's a lot of.
Oh, you mean his own
ties?
You mean
he's at 8-9 months to be able to move that back and show integrity and initiation.
To my knowledge, he's not. And,
mine either. Yeah.
Again, if you hold Trump to his literal word, you're going to be very disappointed.
I'm already.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thanks. Yeah.
He spent his entire life as a very wealthy carnival barker, and nobody forever has held him to what he said. Oh, but I was just making ratings for The Apprentice or whatever. Nobody's ever held him to actually, you said something, we assumed that you meant it. This is the first time in his life, other than on a signed contract about a real estate deal, that anybody has ever said to Donald, 6 months ago you said A, and now you're saying B. No one's ever said that to him before. It has never occurred to him that there might be a credibility problem with blurting one thing and then doing something else. So I guess it's a learning curve for him.
But again, I think in his world, that doesn't matter.
He's going to learn very quickly.
You're in this circle of friends when you're talking business, and so you adopt that sort of person. And then when you're over in this circle of friends, and you just hope the circles of friends never meet.
Well, welcome to the internet age.
But these days,
they all meet.
It doesn't get cut it anymore. Bill is up next. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Jim. I want to thank you last week for having the lady on there that had that book on the military and her father had passed away.
Well,
and I want to thank you very much because you're about the only person out there that brings all this stuff up. And the First Aviation Brigade, where I was at the 1st 10th Air Cav, 129th Assault Helicopter Company, will all the 1st Aviation Brigade will have their banquet in Indiana. I think it's going to be in Indianapolis. I don't know exactly what time, but it's supposed to be around the 4th of July of this year. So, but anyway, you're about the only one that brings this, the military stuff up. And I was trying to figure out if Donald Trump is still going to help the veterans like he says he is. And are you more familiar around with all that money that he was collected? Some people say it didn't get where it was supposed to be. Some people say it did. So you might want to go a little bit more on that. But I do need to thank you for your cooperation last week. That was very wonderful that you had done that for the author.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that, and thank you for your service. Yeah, we're talking about James Shively, who was a Vietnam prisoner of war. The name of her book, I forget her name. The daughter's name is a married name, but it was 6 years in the Hanoi Hilton is the name of the book, and it is grim. It is brutal. The very little is sugar-coated in that book, but I urge every American to read it. And also another great veteran story that I had on, this is the 24th, so it was last Monday night, I had on the last surviving Doolittle Raider.
Really?
101-year-old wow. Colonel Dick Cole, who's still very lucid, had his daughter on as well, and last Tuesday was the 75th anniversary of the Doolittle Raid.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So we did that show. So we like to do a few veterans things like that. As for the question the caller had about the money that Donald Trump raised for veterans, I recall just the vague outlines of that. I do not recall ever hearing precisely what money was delivered to whom, when, or how much. I don't know the details.
No, I don't either. And again, it's interesting how that stuff just gets lost in this fervor of.
Well, there's so much going on; it's hard to keep track of everything.
It is. I'm sure you could go back and do some research on it. Maybe I'll add that to my long list of things to do to see where there's actually records of that having been transferred out.
I remember the statement that he made; it was going to do it, and I remember then later on controversy of did he or didn't he, but.
I always find it interesting when people do stuff like that. Why don't you just get that group and have the veterans stand out there collecting the admission? And why do you have to run it through Trump campaign finding or whatever it is?
Forget about it. Just messes it all up
and makes it all money.
Pass a bucket and then walk right over to the American Legion.
And say here you go,
there
guys.
You go. There's the money.
That's how I'd like to do it. Yeah. Scott is going to join us next. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jim, and Chet. Hey, I'm a veteran myself. I served in Desert Storm and Desert Shield, and while I was over there, I had the opportunity to meet John Glenn, Strom Thurmond. My aunt has gotten me involved in politics since I was a kid. I had one of the best history teachers ever with John Eister at Parker High School. And being around politics has been great in one aspect, but bad in another, because I work on the other side and my folks work on the other side, so we can't talk politics like we should. But, Jim, I just want to tell you, again, just like Bill said, what you do for veterans and bringing stories to life and people and how all the aspects. And I had brought up about Mike Pence to you way back when before we were talking about the vice presidential candidates being chosen, that I thought it was going to be coming out of Indiana. And I was wondering if you were to give a grade, because you gave a grade to Mr. Trump, how would you give a grade from A to F on Mike Pence's vice presidential contributes? And also, I know we're in Janesville, but our House Speaker, Paul Ryan, what would you give him a grade of?
Oh,
I'm
going
to
okay.
let you go, and I'm going to let you have a great day.
Well, thanks. Appreciate your service,
thanks,
and thank
Scott.
You very much for that. Well, I don't remember giving Donald Trump a grade, but I guess if I had to give him a grade overall, I would probably give him a B. He's probably done most of what he said he would do through executive orders. He seems to be trying in the right direction. He hasn't gone completely El Flippo on his Twitter account, which ought to be placed in a blind trust, by the way. So probably a B. Ryan, who has had a very tough job trying to hold together anything but a unified Republican Party. Honest to goodness, I think I would give Paul Ryan probably a B+, because I think he's done a pretty good job of trying to hold it together. They're not unified. I'm sure that he's having thoughts now about Ways and Means he was in charge of before. Yeah. I'm sure he misses that desperately, even with the extra pay and the Secret Service protection. In terms of Mike Pence's grade, I'd give Mike Pence a straight A. I think that he has probably been, for the most part, the adult supervision in this administration. It was a very wise choice on the part of Trump. Outsiders have tended to pick insiders when they are presidential nominees. Of course, Eisenhower picked Nixon. Reagan picked George H.W. Bush. Carter picked Mondale. Mm-hmm. And Trump picked Mike Pence, who spent time, of course, in Congress before coming in the Indiana governor. I think he's done a very fine job so far. He's shown a great deal of loyalty. I would imagine that probably the extent to which you've seen Donald Trump turn more consistently conservative, which is not totally, but somewhat, I suspect that has been at the tugging and insistence of Mike Pence. I think Mike Pence is the runaway front runner for the next open Republican presidential nomination, whether that's 2020 or more likely 2024. So, yeah, those would be my grades so far.
Interesting. All right. 752-4000. We're going to take another quick break. Jimbo Hannon, our guest in the studio this hour and next, when we'll be joined by Alex Skolton of Twisted Sky Tours talking tornado chasing in the next hour. But your open phone calls continue right after this break on WCLO.